Good afternoon. The time is 1:32, and I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. We are in Belch Room 105, the Thomas Stewart Building in the beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Bishop, and Senator Dunbar, as well as myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Could everyone in the room please turn off or mute your cell phones? Also, if any people participating online could please make sure that your microphones are muted as well, and that will cut down on echo that you might experience and any noise that we are hearing here in the room in Juneau. I would like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Carrie Cooperrider, and our LIO moderator, Lisa Denny. Today we have two items on our agenda, Senate Bill 70, Owner and Contractor Controlled Insurance, followed by Senate Bill 88, Retirement Systems and Defined Benefit Option. First up, we have Senate Bill 70. We first heard this bill on February 20th, when we had a presentation of the bill and opened public testimony. Here to present a brief recap of the bill, we have Director Lori Wing-Hire with the Division of Insurance. Madam Director, if you could please state your name for the record and your affiliation, and we will begin this hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Lori Wing-Hire. I'm the Director of Insurance for the State of Alaska. I thank the committee for hearing Senate Bill 70 again today. When we heard it last month, I believe I told the committee that we were expecting that there would be an amendment to the bill. And I believe you have before you that amendment. When we originally looked at this bill, we thought that by deleting number 4, we took care of the issue as respects additional insurers. But conversations we had with a couple of insurance brokers and others led us to believe that we needed to put language back in to clarify that additional insurers are allowed on insurance policies if required by contract, and that is what this bill, or what this amendment is doing, is clarifying that, and I will give you an example. ABC Contractor has agreed to build, for the state of Alaska, let's say, a new transportation center. The contract between ABC Contractor and the state of Alaska would require that the state of Alaska be named on ABC's contractor insurance. That doesn't make it an owner-controlled or OSIP or a contractor-controlled. It's simply a contractual relationship where ABC is building a transportation center for the state of Alaska. And the requirement by contract is that they need to be named as an additional insured. An owner-controlled insurance policy, on the other hand, the whole genesis of it is that the owner or the general contractor, depending on who buys it, names every contractor and subcontractor at the project on the policy. They buy a master policy, if you will, for all parties. That is what Amendment A is, sir, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Very good. Thank you. And with that introduction, I'll ask my vice chair, Senator Bishop, for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move 33-GS1009/A.2.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments or any members of the committee needing further information on this amendment? Hearing no objection, the amendment is adopted. Thank you, Director, for your comments today. We appreciate the information. We will set aside Senate Bill 70 for a further hearing, and we'll take a brief at ease. And we're back on the record, 137. At this time, we will take up Senate Bill 88. During our last hearing of Senate Bill 88, we began invited testimony on the bill. My intention today is to finish the current invited testimony and open public testimony. First up, as our first testifier, we have Marge Stoneking from AARP. Ms. Stoneking, could you please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman and members of the committee. Good afternoon. I'm Marge Stoneking with AARP Alaska. Older Alaskans deserve to retire with independence, security, and dignity. As you may know, AARP is the largest nonprofit, nonpartisan organization representing the interests of Americans 50 and older and their families. Financial and health security are key components of our advocacy agenda. AARP strongly believes that all individuals have the right to be self-reliant and live with dignity in retirement. We further believe that Americans of all ages, including those in Alaska, are faced with a crisis where the goal of achieving an adequate and secure retirement is becoming increasingly difficult. For most Americans, Social Security income is the foundation of financial security in retirement. However, Alaska's public employees do not get to participate in Social Security. As a result, it's even more important that we provide them a modest guaranteed pension they cannot outlive to help ensure financial security throughout their retirement years. As discussions of SB 88 continue, we urge our policymakers to keep in mind the purpose of defined benefit pension plans, which include providing retirement security for teachers, police officers, firefighters, and all other public employees, as well as attracting and retaining the most qualified individuals to serve Alaska's residents in a way that's most cost efficient for the state. A defined benefit pension plan would allow Alaska and our employees to achieve these goals. Like SB 8 proposes and would enable, these plans typically require mandatory participation by employees and shared financing through contributions from both employees and governments. Assets are pooled and professionally managed to take advantage of lower fees, and greater portfolio diversity and economies of scale help manage for targeted income replacement to better ensure dignity and financial independence in retirement. And mandatory annuitization provides a benefit retirees cannot outlive. It's not surprising that defined benefit pensions increase retirement security and therefore reduce reliance on social safety nets. In fact, according to a study by the National Institute on Retirement Security, older households without a pension are 9 times more likely to live in poverty. That's up from 6 times greater in 2006. Moving away from defined benefit pensions has meant that our impacted essential public servants have been on their own to invest for retirement. Numerous studies over a long span of years have detailed how the average investor is unable to accumulate the resources he or she needs for retirement because of inexperience. And of course, we've seen this in recently in the evidence prepared and presented in Senate Finance. In fact, our public employees are currently facing that risk, the risk of poor investment returns, the risk that they might outlive their assets, and the risk that inflation will erode the value of their income in retirement. These risks are a reality for many because, once again, most of Alaska's public employees do not receive Social Security. Without a modest lifetime retirement benefit, most of Alaska's valued public employees may come to rely on public assistance. Generally, public wages are 14% less than private. Public employees as retirees relying on public assistance is not an environment that our state wants to enable for our teachers, public safety professionals, and other public servants. Greater reliance on government subsidies increases costs for all and chips away at the ability to live with dignity and self-sufficiency in one's retirement years. Alaska's inability to offer our public employees a semblance of retirement security, the kind provided by a defined benefit pension, has put us at a significant disadvantage as compared to other states in recruiting and retaining a qualified workforce, as you've heard. And consequently, it's hindered our ability to provide reliable public services, which is also impacting older Alaskans, and why AARP Alaska has raised this to one of our priority advocacy issues this session. I will leave you with a data point from our 2022 AARP Alaska Voter Survey. 61% of Alaskan voters 50 plus polled said they would be more likely to back a candidate who supports restoring pension benefits for public safety, teachers, and other state employees. And AARP is Alaska is happy to work with the legislature to achieve that, and we support SB 88 to do so. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Stone King. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions from committee members for the testifier? Next up, we have Tom Claymire with NEA Alaska. Mr. Claymire, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Tom Claymire. I'm a high school social studies teacher, and I'm currently serving as the president of NEA Alaska. First of all, I'd like to express my sincere gratitude for Senator Giesel and her staff and the legislation's co-sponsors for introducing this bill. Thank you, Chairman Bjorkman, and the other members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee for hearing the legislation and for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm here to offer my support for Senate Bill 88. Alaska is facing its worst educator recruitment and retention crisis in our state's history. We've seen this impact students and families across the state with vacant positions, rolling bus blackouts, and in some instances because of food nutritionist shortages. Rather than being served a standard healthy hot lunch, students are being handed chicken jerky, Cheez-Its, raisins, and shelf-stable milk. We all know that not all students have access to trained librarians or even mental health counselors. This past Monday in the House Education Committee, Education Commissioner Designee Susan McKenzie testified this school year, Alaska had roughly 394 first-day vacancies for teachers. This means that almost 400 classrooms began the school year without a teacher in front of the room, which is more than 2.5 times the only 155 first-day vacancies that we saw in 2019. Those 400 missing adults don't even include the many more unfilled positions for paraprofessionals, aides, reading specialists, bus drivers, and more, who are all vital to making schools work. When completing exit surveys for the Anchorage School District in 2020 and 2021, 28% and 30% respectively of departing teachers cited retirement as one of the three most significant reasons for their departure from ASD. And we can see this statewide as well. Dr. Parody referenced in earlier testimony that the work of the Governor's Teacher Recruitment and Retention Task Force has repeatedly identified retirement reform as a top policy priority to improve educator retention and recruitment. And more to the point, I know the ISO data on this has been shared with you previously also, but it bears repeating that in Alaska, we know that the high rates of teacher retention are correlated with greater student achievement. And of course, the inverse is true. Lower retention equates to poor student performance. If we want to move the needle and improve outcomes for our students, specifically with improved reading scores, we absolutely must provide additional stability in the workforce. Clearly, it's not just teachers, though. It's administrators, superintendents, and all the many other professionals critical to the overall functioning of schools. The worst employee shortage in education is actually one that hasn't been formally studied as much, but we hear about it every day. And that's the incredible turnover rates among our education support professionals, or ESPs as we call them for short. That includes paraprofessionals, clerical staff, custodians, etc. Our ESPs are critical to the operations of a high-functioning learning environment, but are the lowest paid positions and facing the same retirement insecurity. Alaska's educators have been advocating for the restoration of defined benefits since TERS 3 and PERS 4 was created in 2006. And we have watched as some of our best and brightest educators have looked carefully at the equation where we have, one, no Social Security, two, no option to earn a pension, and three, as a defined contribution retirement that, by the state of Alaska's own projections, gives employees only a dismal 30% chance of success. And it's a pretty low bar when they define success, because they said that's simply not entirely running out of money and facing destitution in your old age. And so in that equation, it simply does not add up to stay in Alaska. Alaska is the only state in the country where a certificated teacher, school administrator, or other certificated public school employees can earn neither Social Security nor a pension from their employer. You can see a chart, of course, detailing all the other states' requirements options for teachers from the National Institute of Retirement Security provided in your bill packet. Anchorage and Alaska educators support Senate Bill 88. Without a change in the retirement system, Alaska will continue to hemorrhage our best and brightest educators, and our students will continue to experience a revolving door of adults in their schools. The Alaska economy will continue to be stifled by a public education system that's hobbled by an unsustainable turnover of teachers, administrators, and education support professionals. Should Senate Bill 88 pass, on the other hand, Alaska families and students will benefit from the additional stability in our education workforce and beyond. The Alaska economy will benefit from increased stability, and the experience in our public sector workforce, from bus drivers to plow truck drivers, from career and technical education teachers to the staff processing professional licenses and resource development permits. In his State of the State address, Governor Dunleavy said the following, and I quote, "We need more people solving Alaska's problems and the world's. We need more families achieving the American dream. People are not a nebulous abstract concept. People are what this is all about. Everything we do is for the people, or it should be. Government is about serving people, and the people are why we're here. The people of Alaska today and the certainty of the people of Alaska tomorrow. That's important to remember. There is no tomorrow without more people. We can never lose sight of that," unquote. NEA Alaska members wholeheartedly agree. For Alaska to thrive, public employees need the security of a defined benefit pension. We need to pass Senate Bill 88. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
Thank you, Mr. Claymeyer. Are there questions from members of the committee for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you once again. At this point, I'd like to recognize bill sponsor Senator Kathy Giesel for joining us today. And to all testifiers, when you have written testimony, or if you would like to record testimony that you have given or will give, if you could email that to the committee, and that will greatly help out our recording secretary, Juliana Singh, get those things onto the record. You can send your comments to slac@akleg.gov. That's slac@akleg.gov, and we'll get that testimony accurately entered into the record in a written form. So thank you once again. Next up for invited testimony in the room, we have Mr. Lon Garrison. Mr. Garrison, if you could join us at the table and state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Bjorkman. Good afternoon. Members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, my name is Lon Garrison. I serve as the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. We're a nonprofit association established in 1954, and we serve 52 of Alaska's 54 districts. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today in support of Senate Bill 88, Retirement Systems and Defined Benefit Options. AASB's Board of Directors has adopted three legislative priorities for this year. They are sufficient, sustainable, predictable education funding, retention, recruitment, of teachers, administrators, and staff, and finally, student wellness and safety. These priorities and the supporting resolutions and beliefs of the ASB membership are appended to this testimony and have been submitted to the committee. ASB has long supported a return to a defined benefit program as a preferred option for staff retirement investments. In 2005, the ASB membership adopted the following resolution and has maintained its strong support for reconstituting a defined benefit option. Resolution 4.7 relating to a defined benefit retirement. AASB supports the establishment of a defined benefit retirement program that improves the hiring and retention of highly qualified and effective staff. School districts face an unprecedented crisis of retaining and recruiting qualified, effective teachers, administrators, and support staff. This personnel crisis seriously hinders our ability to provide Alaska students with a quality education. It makes it extremely difficult for school boards to fulfill the state's constitutional responsibility to provide that quality public education for every student every day. As you've heard many times before, one of the most single important determinants of whether a student succeeds in school is the quality of the educator that student gets to work with. While effective learning requires high-quality teacher, the entire school system must support that crucial opportunity for that teacher and that student to be together. And this means a multitude of other staff are needed to make that learning experience the best that it can be. My colleagues have previously provided you with information and statistics about Alaska's retention, recruitment, and turnover crisis with education staff. And that information portrays the school district's challenges in having staff necessary to fulfill their missions. Out of curiosity, yesterday, March 16th, I checked the Alaska Teacher Placement website, and it revealed the following startling numbers. A total of 1,481 positions are currently open, of which 360 of those are teachers, 81 are administrators, 233 are student support services, and the remaining 807 are a variety of positions needed to support and operate a school district effectively. Again, 1,481 positions. This year, school boards across the state are addressing some of the most significant challenges they have ever faced in deciding how to allocate rapidly dwindling resources in order to provide public education. The scarcity of applicants, coupled with this lack of adequate funding, results in districts experiencing staff shortages that further exacerbate the crisis. The lack of a defined benefit retirement option is one more strike against Alaska's ability to retain or recruit public service employees that we need. Senate Bill 88 is a common sense proposal to return to a retirement system that incentivizes educational professionals to invest, dedicating their careers in the service of Alaska. Senate Bill 88 incorporates lessons learned from the past, shares the risks with participants, establishes retirement age and qualification parameters that are more appropriate for today. Senate Bill 88 maintains the current contribution rates by school districts for PERS and TERS, which is somewhat of a relief. I want to acknowledge, though, that districts, municipalities, and boroughs still struggle with these contributions, given the ever-increasing rise in health care costs and liability insurance that have driven dramatic rises in the overall cost of employees. Last week, during a meeting that was facilitated by AASB between school board members and legislators, a question was asked by a senator. What is the difference between spending and investment? What's the difference between spending and investment? There was a pause, a bit of a silence there, and a school board member piped up. And she said, investment implies an expectation of a beneficial dividend or outcome. Spending is a response to an expense. Investment in the long-term viability and retention of quality staff is not without risk. However, Senate Bill 88 is an effort that works to manage that risk while providing a dividend that ensures that we can recruit and retain staff, with the ultimate benefit being better student outcomes. ASB urges the Alaska legislature to be bold and responsive. Make Alaska competitive in the public sector employment marketplace. This is an investment in our students, in our communities, and in our state. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Garrison. Are there questions for Mr. Garrison for members of the committee? Seeing none. Thank you. Next testifier up is Sergeant Daryl Evans from the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association, joining us via the phone. Mr. Evans, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Daryl Evans. I am the president of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. I appreciate the opportunity to speak this afternoon in front of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee and Chairman Bjorkman. Thank you for the time. A little background on myself. I've been in law enforcement in the state of Alaska since 1994 for a total of 28 plus years. I began with the Homer Police Department in 1994, and then I started with the Anchorage Police Department in 1996. I've been able to go to two police academies here in the state of Alaska, so I've attended the Department of Public Safety Academy in Sitka, and then I've attended our own academy in Anchorage when I was hired in 1996. Prior to my current assignment as the president of the Employees Association, I was a patrol supervisor on midshift patrol. I've been a canine handler for 6.5 years, and I've done several other assignments throughout my time with the Anchorage Police Department. I've also been an academy instructor during that time, both in firearms and driving instruction. So I've had close contact with some of our newer police officers and recruits over the years, helping teach several academies over the years. I'm a retired member of the Alaska Air National Guard with 20 years of service. And as a side note, I'm a spouse of a retired Anchorage School District teacher with 21 years when she retired. And so I will say that I am not an expert on the numbers from the Anchorage School District, but as a spouse of a teacher, I will tell you that I have seen secondhand in the last 5-6 years of my wife's time with the Anchorage School District, numbers dwindling of staff, asking staff to do more with less, and ASD having an issue recruiting and retaining teachers, and they're currently in a crisis now trying to hire teachers for vacancies. So I've seen that secondhand. Of course, I am a Tier 2 defined benefit PERS member myself, and so I have that benefit that I someday have a defined benefit to look forward to support my family. I'm here today to talk to you about our current staffing numbers at APD and our academy numbers as well. Currently, at least as of the end of February, with the Anchorage Police Department, we have approximately 410 current sworn officers working for the department, but we're authorized for 444, meaning that we have 34 vacancies at this time. We have, as the president of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association, I receive separations updates weekly on both sworn and non-sworn leaving our department. As of the end of February, we've had 10 sworn officers that have separated from APD. Out of those 10, 4 of those officers were actual retirees, meaning that they had enough time to actually retire from the department, meaning that 6 sworn officers left the department for other reasons. Right now we have an academy of 12 recruits that are currently in training. That academy started with 15 and we're down to 12 now. We have the capability of running 2 academies a year of 28 recruits. And I can't remember the last time, it's been years since we've had an academy that size with 28 recruits. Normally our recruits or our academies are between 15 and 20. And there's always attrition during the academy and then during the field training process. If you do the math on what I've told you that we've lost up through the end of February right now with 10 sworn officers, we're on track to lose 60 officers by the end of 2023 at that rate. We run two academies a year, as I stated. We're lucky to have 15 to 20 in an academy. So if you do that math, we're not going to keep up with attrition for the year at that rate. If we're lucky to have 40 recruits go through this year, then we will have, then we'll still be down 20 at the end of the year on the pace that we're at right now. I said that I had been through two police academies in my career. I've been through the Department of Public Safety Academy with the troopers, as well as the Anchorage Police Department Academy. I will say that both of our academies are, or both academies in the state that I have attended, are high quality training academies. And I'll also say that the lower 48 knows that, and the agencies in the lower 48 are quick to recruit our young officers away from Alaska when they can. And one of the benefits that the recruits will leave us for is a defined benefit that is offered in some other states still. At 1 year on with the state of Alaska, a recruit or a trainee or new officer will receive what's called a basic certificate from the Alaska Police Standards Council. So 1 year on, they receive that certificate. Once they receive that certificate, I will say that that is a ticket to leave the state of Alaska, so to speak, when it comes to law enforcement, because once they have that training certificate from the Alaska Police Standards Council, they are very marketable with just about any other law enforcement agency in the lower 48. To give you some idea of the time frame there, there's about 10 months of training time in the first year at the Anchorage Police Department, including academy and field training time. So that leaves about 2 months of time actually being a solo officer and working on the street before they receive that certificate and make themselves marketable to leave the state. So again, as I said before, six of the officers that have left us in the first 2 months so far in at APD have left us for reasons other than actual retirement purposes. So we're losing those folks left and right. So I'm calling a course in support of SB 88. Senator Giesel, I applaud you for bringing this bill forward. And I hope that this bill can get traction with the Senate and the House both this year, because we are in a recruiting and retention crisis in law enforcement. I will say that there are several reasons over the years that it's become difficult for us to recruit and retain law enforcement, but I also believe that a defined benefit or lack thereof is another reason why we are unable to recruit or retain right now. So I will hope that this bill this year can pass through committee and get through, like I said, the Senate and the House. I appreciate your time today, and I hope that you will keep this bill moving forward for us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Senator Bishop has a question for you.
Thank you, Sergeant Evans, for testifying today. What's it cost to run a recruit through your academy? First question.
Yes, sir, through the chair. So the first thing I'll say is that there are training and equipment items that are issued to recruits, some of which are disposable items that aren't that we don't get back when they do leave us, and some obviously we get back and we reissue to the next recruit. But including the fact that we have to have a vehicle and all of the equipment and the training cost that goes into training a recruit until the point that they hit the street and they're cut loose on their own, that entire cost is approximately $150,000, including training equipment and the cost of our field training officers, our academy staff, and the salary of the recruit themselves.
Follow up,
please.
The second question is, I've heard anecdotally that the training that you can get in Sitka via the troopers or your academy is second to none. I'll just put it in my own terms, high quality training. And after 6 years on the job, when some of these people are rotating out and going to these other departments with a defined benefit plan, that these other states are glad to get them because they could enter their force almost at a detective level with the quality and training that they're receiving in Alaska. Is that fact or fiction, or have you heard that?
I have heard that as well, sir, through the chair. Having 28 years of experience with the department, I have had the opportunity to travel and train in other states and with other agencies, and I can tell you that our training both at APD and with the troopers is second to none. And I can tell you that I have never once heard of one of our officers leaving us for an outside agency and not being hired by that outside agency, which says a lot for our training and experience. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dunbar has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Sergeant Evans, for testifying today. When I was on the Anchorage Assembly, I tried to go to every academy graduation I could, and I remember them usually being in the mid to high teens and sometimes in the 20s in terms of recruits. So it's really disturbing to hear it's 12 or less right now. And, the prior mayoral administration, the Assembly worked together under leadership people like then-Chair L.V. Gray Jackson, to increase the number of officers by almost 100. But it sounds like the numbers are starting to fall again. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about the impact that has on both municipal budget in terms of overtime and the morale of the force in terms of burnout amongst our officers.
Yes, sir. Again, through the chair. As I said, beginning in January, actually, I became the president of the association. Prior to that, for about 6.5 years, I was a patrol sergeant. So I was a supervisor on patrol, grave shift patrol specifically that entire time. And I can tell you firsthand that there was rarely a shift or a night that we did not have to call in to backfill for either people that happened to be on leave or in training or sick. I will tell you that from a morale standpoint, the number one complaint that we get from officers right now is they can't get the leave that they've earned. So they can't take leave when they ask for it. I also happened to, one of my administrative assignments as a patrol supervisor was that I was one of the lead sergeants, meaning that I looked at staffing and I approved and denied leave on a regular basis on our shift. And unfortunately, I can tell you without a doubt, I denied more leave than I approved because of the staffing issues that we had. So it is a morale issue for our officers right now that they can't get leave. We also have difficulty calling officers into work on their off time to cover and backfill because they can't get time off. I'll tell you, for example, when I first came on the department, people jumped at the opportunity because they were few and far between to come in on overtime and work extra on a day off because they were short. And now we're calling in regularly, and we have difficulty sometimes filling the vacant slots that we have on a shift because officers don't get time off as it is, so they don't want to work extra when they actually get days off.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions for Sergeant Evans? Sergeant, thank you for joining us today. Next up, we have Keith Brainerd, National Association of State Retirement Administrators. Mr. Brainerd, please state your name and affiliation for the record, and welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Keith Brainerd. I serve as Research Director of NASRA, which is the National Association of State Retirement Administrators. Our members are the directors and administrators of roughly 90 statewide and local public retirement systems. In Alaska, our member is Ajay Desai, who is the director of the Division of Retirement and Benefits. My opinions do not necessarily reflect those of Mr. Desai or his office. I want to focus my remarks today on NASRA's position on retirement plan design and to tell you that it is possible to design a retirement plan that meets the needs of all stakeholders in Alaska, including public employees, employers, and taxpayers. It is possible to design a retirement plan that does not create large unfunded liabilities or any unfunded liabilities at all, and whose costs you can control. And SB 88 appears to accomplish those objectives. NASRA, my organization, does not specifically support one type of retirement plan, such as a defined benefit or a defined contribution plan. We do support a retirement plan that contains features that are known to achieve objectives for plan stakeholders. And those include cost sharing between employees and employers. That means that both employers and employees are contributing toward the cost of the plan. We support assets that are pooled and professionally managed. That is an arrangement that can and usually does earn higher returns at lower cost with less risk. We support targeted income replacement, structuring a retirement plan to replace a certain percentage of pre-retirement wages at specified age and or years of service of public service promotes retirement security for employees and an orderly progression of personnel for employers. We support lifetime benefit payouts, meaning that once an employee qualifies for a retirement benefit and elects to retire, that employee should be able to receive a retirement benefit they cannot outlive. And finally, we support survivor and disability benefits that should be integrated into retirement programs. That is a feature that is particularly important for positions involved in hazardous duty and public safety plans. These core features of retirement plan design are known to promote employees' retirement security, to reduce expenses, and to enhance the ability of employers to attract and retain employees. In 2005, when Alaska switched from a defined benefit to a defined contribution plan, risk-sharing plans were far less common and less developed than they are today. Over the last 18 years, we have witnessed a significant evolution in public retirement plan design. Risk-sharing plan designs are more common and better developed and understood than they were in 2005. NASRA published a paper in 2019 describing many examples of innovative risk-sharing retirement plan designs in use among states and local governments. Many of these new plan designs were developed just in the last 10 or 15 years. At the core of these plan designs are essential features of a sound retirement plan: cost sharing, pooled assets, benefit that cannot be outlived, targeted income replacement, and survivor and disability benefits. Incorporating risk sharing elements into a retirement plan with these essential features can provide the best of all worlds: a retirement plan that meets the needs of all stakeholders while also protecting employers and taxpayers against unsustainable increases in unfunded liabilities and costs. I'd like to finish by providing you with three specific examples of retirement plans where this is happening. The South Dakota retirement system has offered all public employees in that state a traditional pension plan, a defined benefit plan, with fixed contribution rates for years. Since 2002, that contribution rate for employees and employers alike has been 6%, 8% for public safety personnel. The South Dakota retirement system has no unfunded liability and generally has not had one for years. The retirement system accomplishes this by making benefits variable. When the plan's actuarial experience falls short of expectations, benefits are adjusted so the plan remains fully funded and the fixed contribution rate remains adequate. In 2018, Colorado established risk-sharing features in its retirement plan for teachers and employees of state and local government. This plan allows for incremental increases in employee contribution rates up to 2% in total, like SB 88, and adjustments in the cost of living adjustment if specified actuarial and funding targets are not met. The third example I want to share with you is from the city of Houston, Texas. This plan design was created in 2017 and applies to each of the city's three retirement plans for firefighters, police officers, and general employees. The central feature of the Houston plans is a contribution corridor arrangement that restricts the change in the employer contribution rate to 5% of pay. If the required cost of the plan strays from the target rate by more than 5%, a series of specified changes take effect to bring the contribution rate back into the 5% corridor. Each of these plan designs has worked very effectively for the plan participants and employers. SB 88 proposes a trigger to increase employee contribution rates should the plan funding level fall below 70%, and would prohibit paying a COLA if the plan's funded level is below 90%. These provisions will help protect the plan against higher liabilities and costs and are consistent with many other retirement plans that have been developed or reformed in recent years. They also contain risk-sharing mechanisms designed to shield public employers and taxpayers from the effects of negative actuarial experience, while still promoting the ability of employers to retain qualified workers and of employees to retire with an adequate income. I want to commend the bill's authors for your work in proposing such a thoughtful retirement plan design. This retirement plan would return Alaska to the mainstream of public retirement policy and strengthen the ability of schools, police and fire departments, and other public employers to attract and retain qualified and essential public employees. I urge the committee and the legislature to approve this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Brainerd. Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Brainerd. So one of the things we've been discussing here is health benefits. So the current plan does not include health benefits and instead keeps the health savings accounts that exist in our current Tier 4 system. In other states, is it now the mainstream to provide those kind of lifetime health benefits, or is it more common to have these kind of health savings accounts?
Senator, retiree health care benefits across the country run a wide range from nothing to substantial and everything in between. It's difficult to characterize those, but in general, the trend that we have seen with regard to retiree health care benefits in recent years has been a movement toward more toward defined contribution type retiree health care benefits, where the employer's obligation is focused on the contribution rather than an open-ended health care benefit.
And I think the members of this committee know why, but would you mind sort of specifying why that is the case for members of the public who might be watching?
Well, first I should say that healthcare, retiree healthcare, is a little bit outside my area of expertise. I don't spend a whole lot of time working on retiree healthcare, but I would imagine that with healthcare, the costs can become easily untenable. They can become difficult to manage. And in particular, the difficulty of the way we help finance healthcare in this country between Medicare and other forms of public assistance, that having an open-ended benefit structure like that could create uncertainty and increase costs for employers.
One last question, Mr. Chair. So the inverse then, because this does not do that, it would reduce risk to the state. Is that fair to say?
Yes, sir. I agree with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions from committee members? Mr. Brainerd, I have a question. As a research director for the National Association of State Retirement Administrators, what type of training do you have to evaluate plans like these?
Well, I have 5 years experience working for two legislatures as a fiscal analyst. I served for 7 years as a analyst for the Arizona State Retirement System. And then I have been in this role for 20 years, and that involves reviewing annual financial reports and actuarial evaluations, compiling that information, analyzing public pension information for policymakers and NASRA members and others. Also, I've served on the Texas Pension Review Board for 10 years as chair of the Actuarial Committee for 8 years. Our responsibility there is to review the actuarial soundness of public pension plans in the state of Texas. So I've spent about 30 years of my career analyzing public pension, public retirement issues, including financial data, actuarial data, and so forth.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Brainerd. Certainly a life's work of yours and decades of experience. Just curious, what would you say your batting average is as far as being able to correctly predict and assess retirement plans and successful elements of these retirement plans?
That's a good question. I think I would be batting well over 500.
Very good. That's pretty good. Of course, if a batter can hit 300 for a career, he's going to the Hall of Fame. So 500 sounds pretty good. Mr. Brainerd, oftentimes we have many folks that appear before our committee with lots of things to say, but I found two of the things that you had to say very fascinating, and considering your expertise and decades worth of work, I wanted to highlight them here. It was your testimony, expert testimony before the committee today, that you believe that this bill as presented would not increase the unfunded liability and would also reduce cost. Could you review for the committee and the public assembled why you believe those two things are true?
Yeah, if you heard me to say that it would not increase unfunded liabilities, I cannot say that for certain, but by providing these safeguards, particularly a first step of increasing employee contribution rates and also paying no cost of living adjustment, if the plan falls below a certain funding threshold, the chances of a sustained increase in unfunded liabilities, especially allowing unfunded liabilities to get out of hand, is significantly diminished. And I'm sorry, I missed the second part of your question, sir.
How would a plan like this one reduce cost?
Well, look at, for example, the NERS report, Better Bang for the Buck, by pooling assets for all plan participants, that allows the plan to save or invest for the pool, the entire group, the average life expectancy, rather than requiring individuals to save and invest on their own. And as a result, that lowers investment costs. It lowers the cost of the plan because you have to save and contribute only for the average life expectancy of the plan participants, rather than the as an individual really needs to save living as a very long life. In addition, by pooling assets, you are reducing the cost of the plan and generating a higher investment return than individuals generate on their own. So in order to generate the same level of benefit, a defined benefit plan by pooling assets and saving for the average plan participant actually can do it at a roughly half the cost that an individual can do.
Thank you. Senator Bishop has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Brainerd, does the state of Texas, for their public employees, do they have a defined benefit plan?
Yes, sir. We have a few, and so briefly let me describe. For teachers, which is by far the largest public pension plan in the state, there is a defined benefit plan.
And follow
for state employees. Sorry, go ahead, sir.
And for the teachers, and then I jumped in there, you didn't get a chance to ask. The delay is kind of my fault on that. But what's the benefit calculation for teachers in Texas?
I believe it's 2.3%. That is the retirement multiplier. And those most of the teachers in Texas do not participate in Social Security.
Okay. And you were going to follow up. There's some other public employee sector unions that are DB plans?
Yeah, there are many. I was just going to mention the other big one is the state employees retirement system, which is for state employees. And the state switched from a traditional defined benefit plan to a cash balance plan 2 years ago. It actually went into effect last September. Cash balance plan is pretty close to being a defined benefit plan, except the major difference is that the benefits are affected by the investment performance of the fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions for Mr. Brainerd? Mr. Brainerd, thank you for your expert testimony today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Betcha. Up next, we have Mr. John Duffy. Mr. Duffy, could you put your name and affiliation on the record?
For the record, my name is John Duffy, and I live in the Matanuska Assessment Borough. I am here representing myself, and my testimony is based upon my prior experience as the borough manager of the Matanuska Assessment Borough. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for providing the opportunity to speak with you today regarding Senate Bill 88. I am testifying in support of Senate Bill 88, which reestablishes a defined benefit system for civil servants working in Alaska. I support this important legislation for several reasons. Under the current defined contribution retirement system, the state of Alaska is uncompetitive in the labor market with other states of the union and other sectors of the economy. It has become extremely difficult to recruit personnel simply because workers have a better financial and retirement opportunity elsewhere. I have experienced this problem firsthand when I served as a borough manager of MAPSU. When the retirement system changed from a defined benefit system to an existing defined contribution system. Once the change took effect, we at the borough immediately had difficulty attracting qualified people. I distinctly remember how difficult it was to obtain an experienced and qualified individual to serve as our borough assessor. And when we finally did find someone by making an above average salary offer, we lost that individual in a short time, I believe less than 2 years, because that individual realized that the salary did not provide sufficient funding for long-term retirement. Which brings me to another problem that I witnessed with the defined contribution plan, the retention of employees. At the borough, we were investing significant amounts of money, time, and effort training employees. Yet once they became competent and gained some experience, we soon lost them to other places that offered better retirement packages, primarily defined benefit plans. In addition to the challenges of recruitment and retention under a defined contribution plan, the loss of good, competent employees means that their experience and skill sets are not transferred to other members within the organization. Simply because the competent people gain their experience, find other places with better retirement plans. It seems to me that Alaska has become a training academy for the lower 48 and Hawaii. Also, the frequent need to fill skilled positions like civil engineers, assessors, and purchasing agents means that the organization as a whole suffers and has great difficulty achieving high performance status. I believe we can all agree that it is critical that the services and programs provided by the public sector be delivered in an efficient and an effective manner. Yet such work can only be done if we can recruit skilled professional people and retain them. If we indeed seek to have effective and efficient state and local governments that deliver services and programs that we can be proud of, that meet the needs of our citizens and actually enhance Alaska as a place to live, work, and raise a family, we must make the decision to work and retire here, a wise financial decision for our Alaska civil servants. Presently, it is not. Moreover, the existing retirement system creates a financial incentive to leave Alaska, thereby uprooting families from communities and taking their meager retirement funds with them to spend in other local economies. Senate Bill 88 provides a reasonable defined benefit system which is affordable and diversifies risk among employers, employees, and retirees. As presently conceived, Senate Bill 88 will go a long way towards making Alaska competitive again in the public sector market and help resolve our present challenges of recruiting and retaining competent professional public service. I again state my support for Senate Bill 88 and wish to thank Senator Guizzo for drafting and sponsoring the legislation, as well as all of the other sponsors of the legislation. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I thank you again for providing me the opportunity to speak with you today in support of Senate Bill 88.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Duffy. Senator Dunbar has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Duffy, for your testimony and for your service to the Mat-Su Borough. Two questions. The first is, you spoke about the training you did for these new employees. Can you speak about some of the lengths you went to find and recruit them? Because I have heard some stories about the effort and time it takes for our local governments to go and find employees, often from out of state. And then second, we have seen this spike in vacancies due to this recruitment and retention challenge. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about the impact on the private sector from not being able to fill vacancies in local governments like the one you managed.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunbar, let me respond to your second question first. And the effect on the private sector, as well as the general citizenry, is that it has taken much longer to provide the services that we generally do that are expected of us. For instance, approving a subdivision plat or approving a driveway permit. These things have taken longer because we do not have the qualified people to handle them. And when we do find people to fill a position, it takes us longer than average to train them. And so it has caused a cascading effect in terms of a delay in providing timely services. In addition to that, when we respond to an emergency, such as a flood or an avalanche or earthquake, what have you, we all respond through the incident command system. This is a way of making sure that our response is timely and effective. With new recruits, new individuals always entering borough employment or any municipal employment, it means we lose that type of experience that is necessary to not only respond to an emergency, but to recover from it. And that goes directly towards economic development and making sure that the private sector can do what it does best. And now, since I've talked so much about that, I've forgotten the first question.
It was about the efforts to recruit employees, the kind of time and effort it takes and where you have to go get them.
Thank you for that reminder, Senator. Prior to the change from a benefit program to a contribution program, we would receive many, many applications, and most of those applications came from Alaska itself, it was fantastic because we were able to pick and choose and have very experienced and competent people. As soon as the change happened to a contribution plan, we found that the pool of employees got much, much lower, and that most of those employees, or applicants, if they will, came from the lower 48. And so then we were up against the challenge of, are they going to stay with us? Is their family, or do their family really understand the change in the seasons, the daylight in the summer, the lack of daylight in the wintertime? They're moving away from their families. And so what we found ourselves doing is having a much longer time recruiting, then bringing then getting the individual, and then attempting to pay a higher salary because of the contribution plan. So it's been very, very difficult to attract qualified people. And then, as I mentioned in my testimony today, once we got them here and we would train them, they would gain some experience, and then they would leave. And so the investment that the citizens have made through their tax dollars was lost.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions for Mr. Duffy from members of the committee? Seeing none, Mr. Duffy, thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you.
If folks in the room are interested in testifying during open public testimony later on today, if you could please sign up on the sheet quietly, just over on the table to your right, that would be much appreciated. We'll get you signed up and you'll be able to testify in just a little while today. For our last invited testimony today, Dominic Lozano from the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. Mr. Lozano, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Senator. Yes, my name is Dominic Lozano, and I am president of the Alaska Professional Firefighters that represents roughly 700 firefighters from around the state of Alaska. I'm also a battalion chief and a paramedic for the Fairbanks Fire Department for the last 23 years. I'd like to maybe start back a few years. 2004, as a new firefighter, I sat in front of a similar committee testifying on then Senate Bill 141 on returning or changing to a defined contribution system. And the testimony centered around what is this going to do for our state, the unknowns, recruitment retention. And as a new firefighter back in 2004, a pension system versus a 401k, I didn't know the difference. I sat there and studied and read about the systems and learned about them. And at the time, riding on a red fire truck, sitting in the back, riding backwards, fighting fires, that was the best job in the world. And I started to realize, as I was researching defined benefit versus defined contribution, 401ks, 401As, the alarming inadequacies that I saw, and I think lots of testifiers saw back then, of what this would do to our state in the future. As you all know, Alaska's pension plans experienced large losses in the early 2000s. This was caused by many different effects. Bad actuarial advice without fail-safes, reduced contributions to the plan during high market performance years, and then some down market years. All of those three things combined created what I call a knee-jerk reaction into the DC plan. We were told back then that Alaska was going to lead the country into defined contribution. As you can see, that never happened. No states have followed us into this defined contribution world. The state also took some very good actions back then. It created backups to its actuarial assumptions and bringing other parties in to evaluate the work, both second and third reviews. It also started making mandatory contributions and even some large deposits into the fund to help pay off the past service costs. But what it didn't do is the state failed to review and follow the performance of the DC plan as it relates to its employees. Employee groups have been sounding the alarm for 10-plus years as they've seen firsthand the effects of changing to the DC system. The Alaska Professional Firefighters Association has been working with legislators to fix this inadequacy. We've been working with legislators from both sides of the aisle, from former Senator Kelly, former Representative Kopp, current Representative Josephson, amongst others, of how to address this troubling recruitment retention crisis and to give public safety employees security when it comes to retirement. The Senate majority, through Senator Cassidy Geisel, has created Senate Bill 88, a reasonable defined benefit plan that shares risk, is financially conservative, and incorporates the best practices from pension plans around the country. This legislation can be the number one tool used to retain Alaska's workforce. Over the years, Alaska's tried several different options. We've given bonuses. We've had large wage increases. We've had employee satisfaction surveys. And yet still today, we are seeing alarming vacancy rates amongst all state departments. And even more worrisome is the hollowing out of our public safety agencies. The unprecedented amount of employees who have left public safety since 2006 is staggering. It is truly at a crisis level today. I will back up former speakers on public safety of the hollowing out, the vacancy rates. And this can be seen in departments across the state. I'm sure you'll hear lots of testimony in the days to come on those people who have left, who didn't want to leave, who want to stay in Alaska, who were born and raised here, want to raise their families here, but took the decision they couldn't wait any longer and left the state of Alaska. You've also heard that Alaska is on the brink of an economic boom, the availability of jobs across the state. The time is now to ensure Alaska is ready for that influx, as well as keep those who do travel north. Lots of our families, friends, neighbors came to Alaska, whether it was the pipeline age, for a teacher job, and they fell in love with Alaska and decided to stay. And Alaska gave them financial retirement security and able to do that. We have to offer better schools and safer communities. And that comes with retirement security. Senate Bill 88 brings back Alaska back to the front of the pack in recruiting with the ability to retain the best and the brightest workforce, as well as to keep Alaska's children here with reasons to stay. Now, I know Senate Bill 88 and the specifics inside and out, and be more than willing to sit here and answer any questions you may have on the legislation, as well as the intent of the bill to recruit and retain the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lozano. Are there questions from members of the committee? Thank you for your testimony. Prior to public testimony, I'd like to remind committee members that we have from the Retirement of Benefits, Mindy Voigt, as well as Chief Health Administrator from the Division of Retirement and Benefits, Betsy Wood, online for questions. Before we open public testimony, we'll take a brief at ease. Back on the record, it's 249 here in Beltroom 105, beautiful capital city of Juneau. At this time, I'll open public testimony on Senate Bill 88. If members of the public have a written testimony on the bill, it can be submitted to the committee at slac@akleg.gov. Time limit for today's public testimony will be 2 minutes per speaker. Folks, some folks have signed up in the room to testify. And first up in the room is Christopher Wright, representing himself. Mr. Wright, please come to the table. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate all of your time to allow me to speak today. I am coming from a completely different, unique perspective than what many of you have heard today. I'm going to challenge many of the assumptions that people have made regarding retention and recruiting, specifically to the idea that other states have retention and recruiting issues. Other states have defined benefit plans. And I'm going to challenge that. So let me introduce myself, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Christopher Wright. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm representing myself. The views I am expressing are mine and not the department I work for, nor any board I serve on. I am a law enforcement officer and a direct stakeholder in the proposed pension. I am asking you to reject the return to a pension system that will not benefit individual police officers. It is also not supported by many of my coworkers, many public safety workers, and other stakeholders for which it is designed. Overall, pensions are an outdated and poor way of providing retirement benefits to workers. I bring a unique perspective, work experience, and expertise on this topic. I've been a police officer for 5 years. Prior to, I worked in investment management for 20 years. I retired from Wall Street to become a police officer. I consider it an honor to serve the community I live in. Many of the stated goals of the pension plan will hurt officers. It will take away flexibility, career growth opportunities, life choices. The entire concept of forcing police officers to stay in a job handcuffed by a pension is an abject outcome. Frankly, it's immoral and should rightfully be rejected by any community. A community should not want that. My previous career was extremely rewarding as I saw my firm's clients reap the rewards of long-term investing. Much of those rewards were tied directly to the nationwide transition in the private sector from pension plans, from defined benefits to defined contributions.
Please wrap up your comments.
What's that?
Time has elapsed. Please wrap up your comments.
Yes. So I just want to say the state of Alaska taxpayers and public safety workers deserve a cost-specific alternative that allows for individual responsibility and rewards, and don't force us into a guaranteed investment.
Thank you. Questions? Mr. Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if are you okay with us asking questions to members of the
public? Sure.
So, Mr. Wright, are you aware that this bill does not require people that are currently in defined contribution to join the defined benefit? And does that change your feelings, given that you won't be forced into joining this pension?
No, I won't be forced, but it's a loss of potential opportunity for better retirement for the people that are there now. It also, I think it'll hurt retention and recruiting. It'll make it harder for people to make a commitment to come here if they believe that they have to make a lifetime commitment per se.
Senator Bishop.
Mr. Wright, thanks for your testimony. Would you classify yourself as a competent money manager?
I am not a money manager for other people. I can manage my own money.
How many of your colleagues can manage their own money?
I believe all of them can. And I believe 401k systems have been built for average income Americans for decades. And and the public sector has been left behind that transition.
Last follow-up. 2008, The Big Short. Mm-hmm. You talked about how Wall Street and investors made tons of money. What about the individual 401k investors and Taft-Hartley plans that were left holding the bag after The Big Short and the markets went in the toilet? How would you respond to that?
My response generally to the idea that markets have very tough periods are that the market's going to bounce back. and it has bounced back. If those 401k investors remained invested in their 401ks from 2008, that's right at the heart of when I was doing that in that business. They reaped huge rewards. If they continued to put money in, they reaped huge rewards. If you retired at that time, let's say you were the unfortunate person that might have retired at that time, people have the mistaken thought that if a 60-year-old who retires in 2008 all of a sudden needs to take all of that money out of the stock market. That's not true. They have plenty of opportunity to bounce back, and if they stayed the course, they did.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Sarah Kennard. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Hello, my name is Sarah Kennard. I'm here today with the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association and the IAFS Local 4303. I am a two-year EMT firefighter here in Juneau, Alaska. I appreciate everyone's time today listening to this. Offering is a perspective of what it is really like right now working in a department that is currently not adequately staffed and what that actually means for the taxpayers here in Juneau. Just 2 days ago, we lost yet another very qualified firefighter who moved with his wife, also in the healthcare field, down to Washington because he would benefit from the very strong support they have for their firefighters. What it means for folks here living without adequate staffing in the fire department, when we don't have adequate staffing, the only choice is to take a vehicle out of service. We attempt to have three ambulances on the road at all times here in Juneau, but sometimes we just don't have enough staff for that third ambulance. And so I can't tell you how heartbreaking it is to be on a call on one of the two ambulances in a town with a population size of about 30,000 people, and knowing that your colleagues on the other ambulance are also likewise with a patient. It is illegal for us to leave a patient. It's called abandonment. So if a call comes in for cardiac arrest, someone that very much needs our attention right now, and knowing that there's no one that's able to come to them right away. In the past, our departments have been able to rely very heavily on volunteer corps, but especially since COVID, but definitely over the last decade or so, we've seen our volunteer corps decline, which is the same because that is ultimately where we do recruit from. I myself was a volunteer for a year and a half before I left state employment to become a firefighter because I definitely enjoy the work, but it comes with significant risks, not only to my health, but also to the potential life that I will lead after retirement. Unfortunately, we do also have the unique perspective of seeing what does happen to folks who do have inadequate resources, financial and otherwise, after retirement, when they're not able to support themselves and the living conditions that they find themselves in.
Please conclude your comments.
Yes, absolutely. It does present you with very stark choices, knowing where you could potentially end up if you don't have the means to manage your own 401k, which many people don't.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for your testimony and for your service. So you mentioned that that family that moved down to Washington State. Is that sort of an isolated incident? Have you heard other people may have these same kind of conversations? Have you seen this happen in the past? Because people are moving usually for different benefit packages.
So, unfortunately, as Mr. Wright mentioned, many places are recruiting right now. It is a job market that is saturated with openings. And unfortunately, it just puts us that much farther behind the list of people looking at where they're looking to go. We've lost multiple people down. We lost, I think, two last year alone to Washington, attending conferences down in Washington with my fellows that are also part of IAFF, generally are in shock if they're new and they're just hearing how our retirement is set up here in Alaska. It's disheartening.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Next up, Connor Kincaid. Hello. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
My name is Connor Kincaid. I am affiliated with Juno Career Firefighters Association Local 4303. I am a 4-year employee of Capital City Fire and Rescue. My spouse is also a 1-year employee of the same department as well. My spouse and I have been living in Alaska ever since we were little children. We absolutely love living in this state. However, at the moment, we are actively looking at other jobs at places that offer defined benefit retirement systems. My wife and I are facing the reality of how difficult it might be for us to be able to raise a family in the state when we don't know the security of not having a very good retirement. And as we hear from several earlier testimonies, the idea that our school system, which I have many friends that are in the schools and that work for the school district here, that we might not have the staffing to have good schools that I would want to send my kids to. Our wages also don't keep up with many other states. So the idea of working for less with less security, as much as I love the state, is not very appealing. That's the only commentary I have now.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Kincaid. Questions? Seeing none. We'll move on to off-net testifiers. First up, Nick Clark.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. My name is Nicholas Clark, and I'm testifying today as the president of Fairbanks Firefighters Union, Local 1324. On a personal note, my spouse, Sarah, and I are both participants in the DC plan. Sarah is a TERS, and I am in PERS, and we both have long supported the change back to DB. In 2022, the department hired 15 people. This is a third of the whole department. Fairbanks Fire has been put into a tough position, as this is the new normal. 70% of the department is under 5 years of experience. We call this the hollowing out of knowledge and experience. Our community deserves better. We now only have 6 legacy tier members left with the Fairbanks Fire Department, and we keep turning over the bottom every 2 years. The University Fire Department, whose members we represent, had 2 captain vacancies they struggled to fill in 2022 as well. The brain drain cuts deep, and the community is paying the price. In 2022, my members worked 15,896 overtime hours and 9,474 forced hours for a total of 25,370 hours combined. That's 1,057 24-hour shifts split between 42 firefighters. My members were forced to be away from their families for far too many hours. Put it another way, averaged out, each firefighter worked an extra 2.5 months worth of shift time in 2022 alone. Almost half of that, they had no option and could not leave. They were forced there. My members are leaving the state and starting their families in the lower 48. When they leave us, they have been saying they love Alaska and want to raise a family here, but they're feeling forced to leave. They have to think about financial security, which they cannot have in the lower 48 with well-funded pension plans. We can get people in Alaska and fix the pension system at the same time. I'm confident we can build our ranks and our communities with future Alaskans if we change to the proposed defined benefit system from the current DC plan. Alaska's beauty and sense of adventure will always attract people to stay. Having a secure retirement will keep them here. Continuing with the inadequate DC plan will force them away. I want to thank you for the time, effort, and patience in supporting this bill, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Questions? Next up, Corey Eist.
Yes, thank you. My name is Corey Eist, president of the Anchorage Education Association. I'm a longtime teacher with the Anchorage Education, with the Anchorage School District, 10 years at Muldoon Elementary School, teaching mostly elementary grades, and then following up with 14 years at Polaris K-12. On behalf of the Anchorage Education Association and the nearly 3,000 certified teachers, nurses, school counselors, librarians, speech and language pathologists, basically all of our school-based certificated staff minus the principals. We are in favor of Senate Bill 88 and the choice in returning to a defined benefit. First, thank you for allowing me to speak on Senate Bill 88. As you know, Senate Bill 88 responds to the critical educator recruitment and retention crisis plaguing the Anchorage School District and all the state of Alaska. Anchorage used to be one of the top destinations for educators in the country. Alaska offered a competitive compensation and a benefits package that attracted and retained top-notch educators. Sadly, this is no longer the case. I want to add some numbers and some context to this debate, along with many of the people who went before me today. Currently, there are 538 open positions in the Anchorage School District. From my latest information coming from the University of Alaska, we're only graduating out about 150 teachers a year. So the state is only producing a small margin of what we need in the Anchorage School District, let alone our statewide need. Returning to a state defined benefit program would allow the state to become more competitive in an environment where there's a teacher shortage across the country, and we are all needing to compete for that talent. Currently, we have 256 educators who have given notification of their resignation this year already.
Please wrap up your comments, Mr. East.
Yes, thank you. We are in a staffing crisis, and the teachers are in the classrooms doing their work. We need the Senate and the legislature to do their part and help us in recruiting and retaining our best educators.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Nick Steele. Nick, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you. My name is Nick Steele. I am a middle school teacher in Kodiak, and I'm just speaking on behalf of myself and my wife.
Please begin.
So I'm in my wood shop right now, and the setting is I'm 38 years old. We have a new baby, and my wife is a second grade kindergarten teacher. So thanks for listening to my testimony, and thank you to all the people before me advocating so strongly for this bill. It seems like the majority of them don't directly benefit from it, so I appreciate them stepping out. So we're really concerned about the retirement situation right now. As you know, there's no defined benefit. There's no social security. And as I understand it, we have to work about 30 years to have the best access to our health care. And we're the only state with no social security or pension option. So SB 88 obviously gives the option. You don't have to take the defined benefit. You can keep in the 401 account. That's the best part. Last fall, I looked at a teacher friend of mine's 401 account. For 15 years of service, she has $150,000 in her retirement account. And I understand compounding interest, and that number is not fixed, and it will go up and it will go down. But for 15 years, looking at $150,000, that's less than 3 years of salary to support her family. The projections are about 10 years after 30 years of service. So after 7 years of my own service, including working at Fish and Game in the summertime, I have about $80,000, which is about 1 year of a salary saved in my 401 account. So, you know, my other option would be to be a police officer because my gifts lie in service, but police officers have the same issue that we're having right now. So from the perspective of a teacher, it takes about 3 years to figure all this stuff out and to understand retirement. And right now I'm looking at about, well, I'm losing track here at the moment. I think that teachers have about 25 years. There's an expiration date to this trade that we do. So with SB 88, you get about 50% of your top 5 years, which is about 80,000 roughly for your top 5 years. So you get about $40,000 a year guaranteed. I think that's pretty modest. I don't think it's too much to ask. It sounds like there's a lot of support for it. I really appreciate you guys considering it. And just so you know, it is about being competitive. My wife and I
wrap up your comments, states.
Thank you, sir. We do look at other states, and Alaska's fallen behind as far as retiring securely. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Nathan Erforth. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
For the record, I am Nathan Erfurth, president of the Kenai Peninsula Education Association, but I'm also several other things. I'm a history teacher, I'm a citizen and member of my community, I'm a father, and from all of these frames, I'm speaking in support of SB 88. As the president of the Certified Educators Union on the Kenai, I have tearful conversations with educators who are leaving the state on a regular basis, and the lack of defined benefit is often the ultimate reason. Educators are willing to endure a lot for the profession and to remain in place for the students that they serve, but when it comes down to it, it is simply irresponsible to our families to stay in a state where we don't have certainty that we can retire. All incentives point to leaving after just a handful of years and establishing a permanent career elsewhere. We have to go start over in a real retirement system in another state. As a history teacher, I know that students are not served by turnover, and neither is the economy. Our businesses need graduates to be educated and prepared for the workforce, and that goal is best served by stable, experienced educators that come to the state with the intention to stay. There are studies on studies that show that stability and investment in education result in increased outcomes, better schools, lower crime rates, and indeed a more productive society. I'm a citizen and member of my community, and so are those that I represent. Many mid-career educators like myself know, though, that F-tier Tier 3 retirement will not take care of us when we finish our work. Other states have systems that do, which makes Alaska not competitive. If we believe in economics, we should engage in them and use them to inform our decisions. Otherwise, our students will watch as teacher after teacher comes and goes because it's the personally responsible thing to do, and our students will suffer. These educators are irreplaceable. Teacher hiring fairs that used to have hundreds of thousands of attendees are mere shadows of their former selves. Candidates are sometimes outnumbered by districts desperate to hire. Finally, I'm a father. My children and yours deserve quality educators that stay. I encourage all senators to listen to the testimony from those of us elected to represent their public employees and vote in favor of SB 88. We don't want to leave, but we might have no other choice without it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Erfurth, for your testimony. Next up, we have Heather Baker.
Thank you, Chairman Grierkman. Can you hear me?
We can. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
For the record, my name is Heather Baker. I'm calling today from Saldana, and I'm testifying in support of Senate Bill 88 to restore retirement with dignity to public service employees. I am testifying today with two hats, first as an educator and then as a parent. As an educator, I am the CAP Teacher of the Year from 2019. I am this year's alternate for Alaska Teacher of the Year, and I am a current finalist for the Presidential Award for Excellence in Mathematics and Science Teaching. I think it is safe to say that I'm touching lives of Alaskan students, yet I'm one of the educators you risk losing if a sustainable retirement option is not offered in a timely manner, as I'm a Tier 3 educator in Alaska during the nationwide teacher shortage at a time when new teacher graduates is at an all-time low, and the education system itself is in crisis mode. As I work to prepare my children for their future and tell them to plan ahead, I am needing to address the fact that under current circumstances, I'm not heeding my own advice. I am not protecting myself from my future because I cannot. However, if I take my time and I leave Alaska, I can. I can move to another state like Washington, where not only my paycheck is higher, not only do I receive a hiring bonus, I have a defined retirement benefit for less time than needed if I put it in Alaska. Washington admins reached out to me with this offer. Two amazing educators in my current building are leaving this year for that very reason. Someone else made them an offer and provides for their future, so they took it. I had a candid conversation with my admin, as our building will have 4 Gen Ed open positions this coming fall. We had 2 in the last years that we could not fill, and there's a genuine fear in our building in that conversation of what it looks like when teachers that are already overworked have giant class sizes and that they cannot fill positions for. The simple truth is that we're not doing enough to recruit and retain our quality educators. So it shifts my focus to that of a mom. I'm a mom of 7. My high school sophomore had an online class last year because the building had 40 freshmen in one history class and they could not seat him. My current freshman was not able to take music in 7th and 8th grade because they could not hire a band teacher in the middle school. We moved my 6th grader to another building when hers was unable to hire enough teachers and the class sizes were so large, the behavior support non-existent, that her teacher was regularly surviving her days in tears. My children deserve better.
Wrap up your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions? Thank you, Heather. Next up, we have Shane Westcott.
Hi, my name's Shane Westcott. I'm a member of the Alaska Professional Firefighters as well as Local 1264 here in Anchorage, Alaska. I've grown up in Alaska my whole life, and I hope to stay here for the rest of my life as well. I'm calling in support of SB 88, and I'd like to thank you guys for hearing this bill again and moving it forward. When I talk to my members throughout the state and locally, and when I talk to other IFF members throughout the lower 48, and they talk about this plan and the lack of defined benefits, one of the things that's brought up is that this might not even be enough. This isn't going far enough. And I think that that statement right there shows that this is a good shared risk plan between both the employer and the state, or the employee and the state. This is an opportunity for us to have invest in good quality individuals with good training to stay in Alaska, and for the state to have those benefits as well as the individuals who are willing to give their time and their effort and their knowledge to the state to benefit the citizens of the state of Alaska. So I'd like to again say I'm in favor of SB 88, and I really do appreciate you guys taking the time to hear this.
Thank you very much, Mr. Westcott. Questions from members of the committee? That was our last public testifier for today, but we will keep public testimony open, and I would encourage anyone that we didn't get to today to call back in on Monday when we can take your testimony then, or folks can always submit public testimony in writing to slac@akleg.gov. Were there any closing comments from members of the committee? The committee will meet again on Monday, March 20th, when we will take on more testimony on Senate Bill 88. As there is no further business to come before this committee, we are adjourned at 3:16 p.m.